101.1 The Esports Animal brings you inside the fight game of the MMA.
Oh my God.
With a weekly one-hour show. In the Cage MMA Radio.
Dude, this might be a bad idea.
Hosts Vince Ferrara and Tim Loy bring you a unique perspective from inside the sport. Vince is an MMA lead commentator cage side at many events. Tim Loy is a former MMA organization president and current matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge.
From the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Get big-time national MMA interviews, pay-per-view recaps and previews, matchmaking, predictions, strong opinions, compelling content, weekly things you'll learn, and more on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Three-minute rounds. We're underway in Knoxville.
Here's Vince Ferrara.
In the Cage MMA Radio, 99.1 The Sports Animal, back for another week. Weekly MMA here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Vince Ferrara, co-host as a matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge. His name is Tim Loy. Tim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Vince. Excited to dive in.
Man, there is so much to dive into. And looking back to last week, look ahead to this week. Our guest this week is Bellator MMA on Showtime analyst and former terrific fighter in multiple organizations. Josh Thompson joins us in about 15 minutes. So looking forward to talking to Josh Thompson. If you've been watching Bellator on Showtime, you'll see him on there as an analyst. You have seen him and he will join us. Can't wait for that. A lot to discuss with Josh Thompson. Also, we will look ahead to UFC's fight night this weekend, Whitaker versus Gastelum. Break that down. We'll look ahead to Bellator 257 and then look back on last weekend, Bellator 256 and UFC on ABC. A couple of local fighters in action. We'll talk about them as well. Our big three stories in our first segment, number one, UFC on ABC 2. Let's talk about that main event as Marvin Vettori absolutely smothered and dominated Kevin Holland. Unanimous decision win for the Italian. What were your biggest takeaways on this victory for Marvin Vettori in his middleweight bout?
Well, we said last week that the blueprint was out there on how to beat Kevin Holland, and Marvin Vettori executed that blueprint very well. He went out there and took him down, and like you said, he stifled him, he smothered him for all the rounds, and a pretty clear-cut decision. I believe he maybe got a 10-8 on one of those scorecards, if I can recall. I may be wrong. He did what he was supposed to do. It would have been nice to see a finish, but at the same time, Kevin Holland, still a tough guy, still a durable guy. Can't expect him to make all the adjustments that needed to be made in a short turnaround from the Brunson fight, which was just 2 weeks before.
A UFC middleweight record, 11 takedowns by Marvin Vettori. I mean, he was relentless. He was disappointed with himself in the end. He wanted a finish. It still was dominant, and it was smart. He played it smart as well because, look, Tim, we have criticized Kevin Holland. We did after the Brunson fight, and rightfully so, the way he acted in that. He was more serious in this one. I thought he looked better. Still had holes in his game, and Daniel Cormier and Dominic Cruz were breaking those down, especially in his takedown defense. So it was a better version of Kevin Holland, but it was such a short turnaround. He needs more time to get better.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's acknowledged that. He said he was going to go to see DC, to get some wrestling improvements in there, which is definitely, something that he realized he needs to have.
Co-main event, Arnold Allen defeated Sadiq Youssef. You were hyping this fight going in. Ended up being a unanimous decision for Arnold Allen. He was pretty dominant himself, even though Youssef had his moments. What were your biggest takeaways from that co-main?
You know, Allen's a guy that gets overlooked a lot, but, you know, he's quietly put together an 8-0 record in the UFC and is a guy that, he's very soft-spoken, not super marketable. But when he gets out there, I mean, he's a bulldog, you know. He dropped Youssef two times during that fight, and Youssef's the guy that came in as the striker. So I thought that that Allen had a really nice performance over another hot prospect, that he was the underdog in that fight somehow.
Yeah, that was a little surprising when I heard about that. And Arnold Allen did move up two spots in the featherweight rankings to number 8. Youssef fell one spot down to 12. So what would you do with Arnold Allen next?
You know, I think the fight for him would be a guy that just lost to Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar. He's got the number 6 spot. He knocks off Kattar. Then, you know, now he's knocking at the door of a top 5 spot. So that gives him a chance to elevate. Kattar coming off of the loss, you know, he would still be a ranked opponent for him. He can't expect to fight someone ahead of him now.
Now, going back to the main event, looking at middleweight division, obviously Israel Adesanya is who everybody is gunning for. Marvin Vettori vaulted up three spots to number three. He may have made an even bigger statement had he finished Kevin Holland. I still thought, one, he was impressive. Two, he, to me, is the best candidate to get the next opportunity, while Kevin Holland dropped two spots down to number 12. Does Vettori deserve the next shot at Adesanya, or does it depend what happens with Whitaker Gastelum this weekend?
I think it does. I think if Whitaker wins, then Whitaker is going to get that shot next, whether you think Vettori deserves it or not.
Yeah.
If Whitaker loses, then I think that there is a better argument to put Vettori there, but I still don't know that they'll go to it that quick. I could still see them doing like Vettori Gastelum if Gastelum wins. And then the winner of that potentially getting the title fight. If Whitaker wins, then I'd like to just see maybe Derek, you know, it's easy matchmaker to say Derek Brunson. They just both beat Kevin Holland. And then you've got kind of a clear cut contender for sure coming out of that one.
So what do you do with Costa? Because he's already fought Adesanya and was demolished. And then Cannonier's there.
Cannonier's not a bad option as well. Costa, it's like we just don't know when he's coming back. You know, he was supposed to fight on this one, and apparently the COVID really did a number on him. So, you know, I think he's just, until we kind of hear that he's ready to go, I think he's just kind of out of play.
Really tough outing for Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman from Shield Systems here in Knoxville. Matush Gamrot with a second round TKO on strikes. Man, really connected clean on Scott, stunned him, and then finished him quickly when Scott wasn't responding to those strikes on the ground. What'd you see in that fight?
Man, I knew that was going to be a tough one. Gamrot, I mean, he's a very, very solid prospect. And, you know, Scott couldn't really close the gap the way he wanted to and get in there to deliver his offense. And it seemed like it was maybe frustrating him a good bit to where, you know, he's used to just kind of being in those firefights and being able to get in there and trade in the pocket. He really wasn't able to. And it seemed like it was frustrating him. And so second round, he kind of dove in there and, he got hit with a good one, you know, that kind of dropped him to his knees. And he wasn't out yet, but, you know, he was certainly, you know, dazed to where Gamrot was able to jump on his opportunity there. More so than a bad loss for Holtzman, it was just like a really good showing from Gamrot. You know, that guy's really, really good.
Yeah, he was very impressive. Daniel Cormier was saying that Scott was loading up on his shots. That certainly didn't help him, but I don't know if that was really the difference in the fight or not.
Well, it kind of just plays back into just what appeared to be some frustration. You know, like he really was struggling to establish his range in that first round. So then he's down a round, and so now you start to get a little more desperate.
Yeah, hate to see it for Scott. I mean, he looked in amazing shape, as he always does. And those guys were raving about the shape and him making weight and looking the way he does.
Yeah, it looked great.
Absolutely. So hope he can bounce back here real soon. All right, what else, if anything, stood out to you about UFC on ABC2?
Got to say Mackenzie Dern, you know, she came in as a slight underdog to Nina Ansaroff and got the first round submission. So I thought that was definitely, you know, something that stood out to me. And then I'll also give a shout out to Julian Marquez, who, you know, came in there and put Sam Alvey to sleep. You know, tough bet. Marquez is a marketable guy.
And then he called out Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And challenged him to like badminton to show he's the best of Kansas City. And also Daniel Rodriguez dismantling of Mike Perry. I mean, that was just brutal what he was able to do with him. 129 strikes landed on Mike Perry in that fight. Good card for the UFC. And it's always cool to see MMA getting that kind of exposure on broadcast television. Our number two in our big three stories is Bellator 256. Looking back on that, and Tim, it was the main event, Ryan Bader, Lyoto Machida. Ryan Bader, even though Lyoto had his moments, Ryan Bader was pretty dominant in getting that W.
Yeah, Bader looked great. He was a pretty heavy favorite coming into this, about 3.5-1. And, you know, they're just dominant. I think a lot of people thought he may get the finish there at some point. And, you know, to the credit of his opponent there, you know, he in Machida, you know, he's a vet. He's going to figure out how to survive over five rounds. But, yeah, great showing from Ryan Bader. He's a man.
He is. And part of that Grand Prix tournament, we'll get into that more details on that. I really like it. We'll talk to Josh Thompson about those brackets that Bellator, that approach of giving fans to follow. We'll talk to him about that, ask him his thoughts on more of that Bellator 256 card and looking ahead to 257 this weekend, which we will do a little bit later on in the show as well. But one thing that we'll ask Josh Thompson about next segment that I want to get your thoughts on is what you saw from Olivia Parker. She was finished in the first round, armbar subbed by Kat Zingano. Tough to see it end that quickly for Liv on that biggest stage, as hard as she's worked to get there. Break this down for us. What'd you see in the fight?
I thought Olivia did accounted well for herself up until the end there. She did okay in the clinch exchanges. I was able to turn Zingano at one point herself. Got a sweep, which was nice to see. Just Zingano off her back is still going to be very dangerous, and it's a big step up in competition. It's hard to replicate that level of competition on the regional scene without that in-between ground, that middle ground, fighting the next level of talent below someone that as established as Zingano. So it was definitely a tough spot for Olivia to be in. Props to her for stepping up to the challenge and the opportunity and, get to fight on a huge card, on the main card at that. So, from what I could gather, her spirits are high. It was a good experience for her, and she'll be back in the shop.
Yep, she's proud of herself. She'll continue to stay after, has a great camp to try to work on those tools, and everyone will lift her up if she does have any down thoughts. Number three, winners and losers from the entire weekend of MMA and any of the organizations. Tim, I'll let you start first. Winner and loser from what you saw last weekend.
I'm going to go with Arnold Allen as my winner, just because, like I mentioned earlier, he's just very quietly gone 8-0 in the UFC. He's 17-1 now overall. He puts on entertaining fights when he's in there, and now he's cracked in, into the top. Well, I guess he was number 10 to start, but now he's number 8, and he's one good win away, I would say, from being in a notable fight that could start to change around everything for him when it comes to, being a title contender and whatnot. The biggest loser this time, there's a few to choose from here. But I'm going to go with Sam Alvey, and I hated it because, Sam Alvey is such a likable personality, mm-hmm. but he's just, these young, explosive, athletic guys are really just going to give him trouble. He just doesn't have the speed to keep up with it anymore. Now he got choked unconscious. I don't think that's ever happened to him. So he could be the end of the line for Sam Alvey. Who knows?
My winner, I'm going to go with Mackenzie Dern. No one vaulted up the rankings more after this weekend in the UFC than Mackenzie Dern. And you mentioned her performance. So impressive. Another armbar, of course. But I mean, she really worked hard to get there. I think she dominated Nina Nunes from the jump. And she fought to her strengths, even though I think she has improved in her stand-up game and continues to get better. She's more and more complete every time. But she went the route of what her strength was to get this done with and put an exclamation point on her victory. Went up 6 spots to number 5 in the women's strawweight division. I'm with you. I thought her performance was outstanding, and I'm honestly not surprised. And then for loser, I'm going to go with Mike Perry. I talked about Daniel Rodriguez, 129 strikes for Rodriguez. Mike Perry ate all those, and a lot of them did damage, including to Perry's nose, which keeps getting broken seemingly in every fight. Only 61 return. Perry was tough, but man, we keep seeing Mike Perry. He's tough and could take punishment, but this sport is more than taking punishment. It's been a while since I've seen the Mike Perry that I think still this image of out there in the sport.
I would agree. He must really be in the good graces of the UFC brass. He can miss weight. He can go 3-7 in his last 10, and it still just doesn't feel like maybe between you and I and your average fan, that he should be, UFC, maybe even the UFC at all, but at the same time, it doesn't really also sound like they're calling for his head. So, who knows, man? After that, they cut a guy like Overeem, who's 4-2 and knocking on the door of a title,
That's Tim Loy. I am Vince Ferraro. We will visit with Bellator MMA on Showtime analyst Josh Thompson. That's next on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Now it's time for In the Cage MMA Radio's weekly marquee interview, letting you hear from the personalities inside the sport. In the Cage.
Back here on In the Cage MMA Radio, 99.1 The Sports Animal. It's interview segment time, and you know we bring you big-time interviews, and why not talk to a terrific fighter that has made the transition into the broadcast booth? He's an analyst for Bellator MMA on Showtime. That is Josh Thompson. Josh, Vince Ferrar here in Knoxville. How are you?
Good, buddy. How you been, man?
Man, good. Really good. We talked to your podcast partner, Big John McCarthy, who lives here in Knoxville. Talked to him a couple of weeks back. Let's start there. How has that been, though? Do a podcast with Big John McCarthy.
You know, it's been good. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot, like, when I had actually approached him, because I had already had a podcast that I had started, and my partner and I kind of started to split ways a little bit. It wasn't getting the traction that we wanted. I knew that I wanted to get something going. And so I was doing it on my own for a little while, and we had John on as a guest before. And I just thought to myself, since John and I were both working for Bellator, it was a good opportunity for us to, you know, try and do something else outside of just Bellator. And so I approached him. I said, hey, you know what? Because you got a lot of the knowledge. And let's just be honest, fighters, like, we've seen this over the last couple months, fighters have no idea what the rules are. None. We have no idea. We know you can't grab the fence. We know you can't put your fingers in the eyes, you know, eye gouge, your fish hook, and all the other stuff, and no growing shot. Right. That's like just common knowledge. But like, strike to the back of the head, we just saw, you know, recently, and like other fights, you know, knee on the head of the ground. There's just so many things to look at. And so when I approached John, I was like, hey, you bring a very unique aspect of talking about fights. And so the rule stuff needs to be talked about on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a show, there needs to be something. There's always something that goes wrong, whether it's the reffing or whether it's the judging, whatever it is. And when you're doing a podcast like with someone like Big John, he helped write the rules, if not wrote all of them. So it's like you get a perspective from him about the rules. And then on my side, I'm giving you the fighter perspective. I'm like, hey, I was thinking that fighter was down. I was thinking we were still going. And let's not forget, you're locking me in a cage with another human being and telling me to beat him up. And so do you think I'm really going to follow the rules? Absolutely not. Not all the time. So, That's what's great about having the, you know, John's perspective in there and you know, in the breakdown of the judges as well.
So when we talked to John, he talked about how Bellator had these new gloves that didn't start out as open to maybe cut down on those eye pokes that really shut down so many fights in MMA. What are your early thoughts on those gloves maybe helping that issue out?
Well, I agree with them. I wish the UFC would follow suit. Mm-hmm. The problem is they've got stake in the game with their gloves, so they're not really taking the fighter safety into consideration. They need to find a way to start molding their gloves with a little bit of a curve to them, so it points the fingers down.
Right.
That also helps too for a little bit less broken hands as well, because then the fighter's hands are already almost closed. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times fighters will keep their hands open and then they'll throw and their hand won't be all the way closed by then. And so then that's how you get a broken hand. That's how you break your hands. So, it would be best for, you know, I think all promotions to follow suit in terms of, you know, with a little bit of a curving of the gloves, help stay, keep away from the eye pokes, as well as it will save some of their hands as well as some of their athletes' hands, so they won't be out for long durations of time. Let's not forget, fighters make a living by fighting. They don't make any money unless they're in that cage fighting. They don't make any money. So if they get a broken hand or they get, you know, their cornea scratched or whatever, their eyeball scratched, whatever it is, they're out for a while. And when they're out for a while, they're not making any money. So those are all things to take into consideration.
We're visiting with Josh Thompson. He is an analyst for Bellator MMA on Showtime. They are two events into their 2021 calendar, and Bellator 257 coming up this Friday night back at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. Of course, it's Vadim Nemkov against Mr. Wonderful Phil Davis. We'll get to that here coming up in a bit. Before we talk about that, Josh, I want to ask you about your broadcast career. Now working as an analyst on Showtime, talk about what that has been like for you to be in that role.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, Showtime, we came back on to Showtime these last two shows. Mm-hmm. Showtime is pretty much where my whole career was developed.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know I was with the UFC before, but I mean, I was the Strikeforce World Champion and all my fights were on Showtime. And so it's kind of where I developed my career. And I think that's why it's been such an easy transformation or transition for me to get into the analyst world and being around the same people that I saw when I was fighting for Strikeforce, you know, that are still with the company. And so it's great to see that group of people. I mean, like Jen Brown, she used to do interviews with me in the back, and now I'm working side by side with her at the desk. I never would have thought in a million years it would happen. And I'm very grateful and blessed to be part of this. And the sky's the limit. I really believe that in terms of this roster that we have of Bellator fighters is better than the roster that we had with Strikeforce. And look at how many of those guys went over to the other promotions and became champions and all those other promotions. And so what I'm sitting here telling you guys is this has nothing to do with me being biased towards the promotion, which I tend to be sometimes, but I have to be very upfront and honest, is that our roster right now is phenomenal. They're the best. I would say it's way better than Strikeforce's roster. So when I'm having this conversation, I'm thinking to myself, you got guys like Patricio Pitbull, who's just, to me, he's probably the greatest of all time in that featherweight division. You know, you've got Douglas Lima, you've got Gegard Mousasi, you've got all these guys that are there. You got Nemkov now exploding on the scene over a huge win over Ryan Bader. You know, he's got his hands full, though, you know, against Phil Davis. Phil Davis is they've already fought before. Nemkov was winning the first two rounds. At least I had it scored, Fenton Nemkov winning the first two rounds. Phil Davis started coming on in the third. This is a five-round fight. That first fight was only three rounds. Does Nemkov have the gas to get through five rounds with Phil Davis? The Phil Davis arresting, Phil Davis jiu-jitsu, Phil Davis striking, all of those things, the pressure. Like, does he have five rounds in him? I mean, he dispatched Ryan Bader pretty quickly. And Ryan Bader's beaten Phil Davis. Phil Davis started to come on with Nemkov. So there's a lot at stake right now that Nemkov, there's a lot of things that Nemkov needs to answer for himself, not just for himself, but for people like me, who felt like Phil Davis was starting to take over that fight in their first fight. Had it been a five-round fight, I don't know if he would have won that fight. So those are things to start keeping in your mind when you're watching this fight play out this weekend.
That was, what, 2018 when they fought the first time? How much better is Nemkov since then?
Well, look, fighting's a confidence thing. So the fact that you've got a knockout performance over Ryan Bader, who's also the heavyweight champ, and that was the former light heavyweight champ, knowing that you beat him and knowing that he's beat Phil Davis twice, you should be thinking the same type of thing. Like, all I got to do is do what I did that last fight. But he looked great in those round and a half against Ryan Bader. And he looked great in that two rounds against Phil Davis. It's that third and fourth and fifth round that we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. So confidence is key in this sport. I think he's got the confidence to ride high. I think he's probably training even harder than he was before he was champion. He gives that vibe. But the thing is that Phil Davis is a seasoned veteran. He knows exactly what Nemkov's going to bring now that they fought before. He's just got to make sure that he went back to the drawing board, fixed a couple of those tweaks. And if I'm Phil Davis, I'm dragging him into deep waters and trying to get him into that fourth and fifth round of pushing a pace on him to make him slow down early.
Josh Thompson from Bellator MMA on Showtime joining us here on In the Cage MMA Radio. I'm Vince Ferrara. What else excites you about that card? Because there's more of those great 205 fights on that card.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's good fights in the card. I mean, like, give me someone that you want to see. Give me somebody that you think you want to see.
I want to see what Corey Anderson looks like in this opportunity. Obviously, he's got a tough opponent, but, man, the bracket, I think, if he's able to get in there, is quite challenging for him on his side. Want to see how he looks in that situation.
Yeah, Yoksha Muradov is fighting Corey Anderson, and that's a tough, tough fight. Yoksha Muradov is good on the feet, good on the wrestling. He's got good ground. But the thing, Corey's going to have a hard time maybe potentially getting him down. The one key, though, is that Yoksha Muradov is nowhere near as fast as Corey Anderson. So Corey Anderson using his length and his reach to stay on the outside until he's ready to push that pace, get in his grill, and get into the takedown. If he can use the length and the reach, stick and move until Yoksha Muradov comes a little bit close, gets a little frustrated, it'll make the takedown a lot easier for Corey Anderson. On top, Corey Anderson's a beast, man. Yeah. So he gets on top of you, he's going to be nasty good. So Yoksha Muradov's got to make sure he doesn't end up on his back for too long. Otherwise, it's going to be a long night for him.
I want to ask you about a fight from the last card. Kat Zingano defeated Olivia Parker. Olivia Parker is from right here in Knoxville. She had great respect for Kat Zingano. And as you know, terrific story. Liv Parker lost 150 plus pounds and just a real inspiration. She lost and was subbed in that first round via armbar last week. What'd you think of the way that fight went down?
Well, look, there's a lot of pressure, and I'll say the same thing about Liz Carmouche. There's a lot of pressure on Liz and Kat to perform. They came over from the UFC. You know, they wanted to kind of be catapulted right into the title conversation. And so then giving them their debuts, both of their debuts didn't go as planned. It wasn't as good as they should have been. Both of them admitted that. There's a lot of nerves that go along with that, which that's to be said. I think that Kat, I felt like she lived up to what she needed to do in this fight, you know, and Olivia Parker, you're dealing with somebody in Kat Zingano. It's way more experience, and the experience came through. You got a good reversal, but then the transition, you thought, I think Olivia Parker, once she got the reversal, she started to think, oh, I'm on top now. Kat, being a veteran, transitioned right to the armbar and got the finish. Those are things that's just experience. Doesn't matter. You've got to have fights under your belt to deal with something like that. The fight doesn't end when you get on top. You know, the fight, the just because you got back to your feet from being taken down doesn't mean that the fight's over. You got to keep fighting every second and every minute. And she relaxed for a second and got armbarred. So Kat did what she was supposed to do. Liz Carmouche, she's got all the abilities. I almost get the vibe and the feeling, though, that she's second guessing herself. And she shouldn't, though. She's so damn good. She needs to just push into people and make them fight at her pace. And I don't know if that's just because she's done it for so long that now she's getting a little hesitant. And that happened to me right before I retired. I started getting a little hesitant. You know, we'd been doing it for so long. The age starts to kick in. You know, you feel like you're a little slower. I don't know what it is, but this is the first time in a long time that Liz Carmouche has been bigger than one of her opponents. She's normally the smaller person. And she didn't go out there and command the cage like she should have. And I expected her to do that, and she didn't do that. And that's why we ended up seeing the fight go the way it did. You know, she still gets the win. It was a dominant performance, but it wasn't as much as we would like to see. If you're going to fight for the title next, I got to see more out of you. At least that's my perspective on it. But I know she has all the talent and all the ability. I mean, she's phenomenal. She's good everywhere. She just got to just go out there and let it all go.
Last couple of things. Really, really appreciate your time visiting with Josh Thompson from Bellator MMA on Showtime. The Grand Prix, how much do you think that connects and resonates with fight fans that have a bracket, something to look at and know what the traction is versus matchmaking and who knows what the background is and the reasons for it?
Well, you've got to give the fans something to follow. Mm-hmm. And right now what it was when Scott Coker decided to do the light heavyweight division, when he decided to do this tournament, it was because there was a lot of interest in it because of the new signings of Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson and then Nemkov just upsetting Ryan Bader. You know, there was a lot of new things happening in that division. So you've got to strike while the iron's hot. And the fact that both of those guys came over from the UFC, you know, and I mean, Anthony Johnson's phenomenal. Phenomenal, you know, and his last fight, I believe, was against DC, you know, for the actual light heavyweight title in the UFC. So for him to come back and decide to leave the UFC and come straight to Bellator to sign and be part of this tournament, it says a lot about what his goals are. His goals are to obviously win $1 million, a lot more than $1 million. I mean, by the time he gets done with the tournament, he gets to the finals and he wins it. But and then Yoel Romero, the same thing, is to go out there and prove that. I mean, Yoel is somebody that cuts a ton of weight. And for him to be fighting at 185, I mean, it kind of made sense because he is shorter in stature and he's built like a brick house. But him having to not cut weight, though, that could be a dangerous man. Someone who just come in there fully fueled is a dangerous man. And so you've got him now with the new rising star, you know, Nemkov, you know, winning the title. You know, and you've got all the other veterans. You know, Lyoto Machida just lost to Ryan Bader. Had a tough go. He had a good first round, but then just Ryan Bader picked him apart after that and dominated the top positions. You know, you've got Yoshi Meridoff, who's going to be fighting Corey Anderson. Corey's like kind of the I wouldn't say dark horse. He's the forgotten soul. Like people have just like, because he signed before Anthony Johnson and Yoel did.
Right.
And people are like, okay, they moved on to the next two. And so I feel bad for him. But realistically, it's kind of a sneaky good. He's going to sneak up on people. And I think he's got a good chance of getting to the finals once he figures out Yoshi Meridoff, because Yoshi Meridoff's not very well known because a lot of his fights have been overseas, but he's tough. And so once Corey gets past that riddle, him fighting Ryan Bader, the two of them have trained together before, and I've heard rumblings about Corey was able to handle him. And so that says a lot about how Corey Anderson and Ryan Bader will potentially meet in the finals if he can get past Yoshi Meridoff. So that, knowing that Corey should probably be in the finals against whoever wins the other side of the bracket, which the other side of the bracket, everyone's calling killer's row. You've got Anthony Johnson, Yoel fighting each other in the first round, you know, and then you've got Nemkov versus Phil Davis, you know, Phil Davis being the former light heavyweight champion. So all of these things together make for a perfect storm. And like I said, right now, Scott Coker knew that the iron was hot. The media was focused on all the new signings between Corey Anderson, you know, Yoel Romero and Anthony Johnson, that he had to do it right now. And this was the time. And I'm glad he did.
I know it's not your call. UFC is putting together a show at Jacksonville, as you know, with fans, and are going to have full capacity. Do you know or have a sense for how long before you might see Bellator have fans in an arena?
You know, I don't know. I think we're going to be contracted into the Mohegan Sun until June, but I don't know what the leniency will be with Connecticut. Connecticut may start allowing fans at a small capacity, you know, probably in the next 3 weeks to a month. Who knows? I know here in California, where they have some of the strictest, you know, policies here in terms of lockdowns. We just barely got to 25%, but they just released saying that they're going to lift all restrictions by June. And so if that's the case, I mean, like, if we're going to still be at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut's ahead of us, you know, in terms of allowing things. So, I mean, I would imagine if we could get at least, you know, 25 to 40% capacity at the Mohegan Sun Arena, I think that they may do it. Now, like you said, let's just preface this, is that it's not my call.
Right.
So, but I would love for AJ McKee and Patricio Pitbull to fight with fans. That fight, I feel like, is the fight that's flying under the radar. It's the best. I think if Bellator was to say, hey, what's the best fight we could put on right now at this moment for all the fans to see, it would be that fight. It'd be Patricio Pitbull versus AJ McKee. That to me is just the younger lion trying to just kill the older lion, you know, and it's just one of those fights that I think everyone's going to be, they're going to be glued to their TV watching. And if they're not, they should be.
The podcast of Big John McCarthy is weighing in. You can check that out. That's the Twitter handle as well. And you can follow Josh on Twitter at The Real Punk, the punk Josh Thompson, our guest here. Hey, Josh, awesome job as an analyst. Look forward to seeing you this Friday night, 9 p.m. on Showtime for the prelims and then the main card. Enjoy it and keep up the great work.
What do you think? You think I'm good? I'm a little long-winded, but what do you think? You think I'm a good analyst? What do you think? Give me your perspective.
Absolutely. I think you're doing an awesome job. You could tell, and I was going to ask you this, but I don't want to keep it too long. You could tell that you put in your research, because I think sometimes analysts, you could tell they kind of just show up and they go off of just their fighter background. And yes, they can get through it, but you put in the research. You're watching guys fight. That's, I think, the separator for you.
The hardest part is learning how to say names like Yang Shmerdov.
Tell me about it, especially in this sport, no doubt. Hey, Josh, awesome job. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy, having me on. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. That is Josh Thompson for Bellator MMA on Showtime, 9 p.m. this coming Friday night. We will take a look and have a full card preview of that card next here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
What big events are coming up in MMA?
Well, right now, Vince and Tim have the answers. This is the pay-per-view and MMA show preview on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal. Really cool to catch up with Josh Thompson from Bellator MMA on Showtime in our last segment, giving his thoughts on Olivia Parker and this weekend's Bellator 257 show. That's what we do. We bring you big time interviews all the time here on this show. If you ever miss our show live every Thursday night, 8 to 9 p.m. here on 99.1, the Sports Animal, you can always catch our podcast. It's posted and archived on our website, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Then also, wherever you get your podcast, you can listen there, subscribe, rate, and share it, and then tell all your friends about the weekly MMA radio show here in Knoxville, Tennessee, In the Cage MMA Radio on 99.1, The Sports Animal. And of course, you can follow us on social media. Find Tim Loy on Facebook. You can hit me up on Twitter at Vince Sports. It's our preview segment each week. UFC Fight Night, Whitaker versus Gastelum. Robert Whitaker, 22-5. Kelvin Gastelum is 17-6. Whitaker is the number one contender in the middleweight division. How do you see this 1-8 contender matchup in the middleweight division in the UFC?
You know, originally slated to be Paulo Costa and Robert Whitaker, which would have given us a nice little top five fight. But, you know, Costa's out, as we talked about earlier. And Gastelum has been, you know, he looked good his last time out, as we talked about. There's a little bit of a question coming into that one as to what he would look like, but he actually looked great. Seems like he's really taking things seriously now. So I think this is a good fight. It's a fight that we were shocked that it hasn't already happened before. You know, if you told me that these guys had already fought two times, I'd probably believe you. But no, man, Whitaker to me is still the favorite here. I think a win for Whitaker probably puts him back into the title, into a title fight. with Adesanya, whether people think it should be him or Vettori or what have you. I think a win here for Whitaker will get it done. And I think we see all five rounds here. I think Ashland is very durable. Whitaker is as well. But I think Whitaker just a little bit more well-rounded. And I'll go with Whitaker by decision.
Both of them coming off of wins. Whitaker over Cannoneer. He's actually beaten Till and Cannoneer in back-to-back fights to get back on track. And then Gastelum has gotten back on track after he had suffered a three-fight losing streak. He beat Heinisch in his last fight. So he looked a lot better there. It's one fight, and he's got tougher competition now. I like Whitaker to win this. I think he has more ways to win and a longer track record of success in recent fights. Co-main event, Jakar Close against Jeremy Stephens at 155 pounds. Close 11-2-1. Stephens at 28-18. What's Vegas saying about this?
You know, I expect it to be a close fight. Vegas agrees. It's essentially a pick'em. You know, they have Stephens as a negligible favorite, minus 120, which is, you know, about as close as you can be to a pick 'em with Close coming back at even money. But, you know, the experience is certainly with Jeremy Stephens. He's been in the bigger fights, been at this for a long time. You know, Close actually coming off of a loss. You know, he got knocked out by Benil Dariush about a year ago. So, you know, he's been out for about a year. We'll see if he's able to make the adjustments and come back. Jeremy Stephens is a hitter too, you know. So the button has been pushed by Dariush. Before, I think that, you know, Close is the kind of guy that's, you know, he very rarely gets finishes, never really. So, you know, he's going to look to accumulate points and get a decision. Whereas I think Stephens is the type that's going to go out on a shield and really kind of push the pressure. Really hard one to call. I'm going to go Jeremy Stephens, but not with a lot of confidence at all. I mean, he's lost four in a row.
He's lost four in a row, and in the middle of that, he has a no contest against Rodriguez. I know he's tough and durable and all that, but to me, you got to bring more to the table right now than that. Before the loss to Dariush, Jakar Close had won three straight. Wasn't against the highest level competition. I get that. I still give him the edge in that one. Also on the main card is VFC alum Luis Pena against Alex Munoz, also in that 155-pound division. What do you think of Pena's opportunity here?
Yeah, it's been a minute, I think, since Pena's been in like what you would call quote unquote like a favorable spot, but I think he is here. Yeah, you know, the odds makers have got him about minus 150 favorite. Munoz is a very good wrestler, but he's also just very one-dimensional, and I think the guys that are going to give Pena trouble is going to be like your heavy hitters or guys that can you know, potentially submit him. But I think Munoz is going to play right into Pena's hands here, going for takedowns. He's probably going to absorb a lot of knees and things like that in the clinch. And then even once he's got him on the ground, I think Munoz is not really a finisher. So I think Pena is going to have ample time to work submissions and whatnot.
Both of these guys coming off of losses, Violent Bob Ross to Kama Worthy and Hawk Paras defeating Munoz last time out. So we'll see how that plays out. 6-inch height advantage for Luis Pena in this one. Another VFC alum, Gerald Meerschaert, fighting Bartosz Fibinski at 185 pounds. Break this one down. No, Meerschaert wants to get back on track.
Well, you know, while, you know, they're, the size discrepancy isn't really the same as the last fight we talked about, I think stylistically it's very similar. And that Fibinski is going to want to grind. He's going to want to clinch. He's not a finisher. He's not a big hitter. And it's the big hitters that have been giving Gerald Meerschaert a lot of trouble lately. He's got knocked out two times in a row. So up until that point, he showed pretty good durability. I don't think he has to really worry about Fibinski going for the knockout here. He's going to try to wrestle him. Meerschaert's going to have ample opportunity to try to work his striking. And if he winds up on his back, you know, he's a great submission threat over the course of three rounds. I like Meerschaert to get it back on track here. But again, it's tough because Fibinski is very good at grinding people out.
Both of these guys coming in on two fight losing streaks, GM3, Gerald Meerschaert, and the Butcher, Bartosz Fibinski. Also on the May card, Ricardo Ramos, Bill Algeo at 145. What do you think of this one?
That's going to be a fun fight. You know, Algeo is one of these guys that he flies under the radar, but he's like low key, like always in really cool, exciting fights, you know. And he's been matched up tough. You know, he had to fight Ricardo Lamas in his debut. And then he beats by Carlisle. Then, you know, Ricardo Ramos is definitely more of a jiu-jitsu guy, not a whole lot of striking, not a whole lot of durability either. So I think Algeo makes it two in a row here, actually.
Love his nickname, Senor Perfecto.
Yeah, no doubt.
And Ramos coming off of a loss to Murphy his last time out. Abdul Razak Al Hassan is back, 185 pounds. Jacob Malkoon, what does this look like to you?
This looks like a loser leaves town match to me, man. Like, you know, Al Hassan had so much steam behind him. He came back, you know, after his legal issues. He's lost two in a row to guys that it appeared they were trying to serve up to him. Malkoon, they're definitely trying to serve up to him. This guy is, you know, not really a UFC level guy. He's training partners and friends with Robert Whittaker, which got him his initial opportunity that he got knocked out very quickly by Phil Hawes. So, you know, Al Hassan is also a hitter very much in the vein of a Phil Hawes without the ground game. So I think Al Hassan is a rightful -300 favorite. If he doesn't get through this one, I'd say he'll get cut. But either one of these guys can get cut.
18 seconds in the loss to Haas. What else on the rest of the card stands out to you?
Well, you know, it's rare that you see Andre Arlovsky as a short notice replacement opponent, but he is in this case against Chase Sherman. Definitely a tale of two generations. Chase Sherman, I think he's from over the Mississippi region there, and he's always in exciting fights, not the most technical guy. Arlovsky is like the exact opposite. You know, he is very technical to a fault at times. So that's interesting. And then, of course, also a little bit later down the car, there's a Jessica Penney return. We haven't seen her in several years. She was supposed to try to fight a couple weeks ago, and that got called off. And then also keep an eye on Juan Espino. You know, he won the Ultimate Fighter heavyweight division a couple years ago, and he's back at it against an undefeated Alexander Romanov.
Real quick on Bellator 257, we talked to Josh Thompson last segment about the main event, Nemkov and Davis, that one. Who do you like in the main event?
I think we see Nemkov get the win here. You know, Vegas has got him as the favorite. Once again here, he's about -2-1. And I think Nemkov gets it done here in the main event over Phil Davis.
Lots more to get to. We're going to try to squeeze in a bunch into our lightning round. That is next as we take a look at the upcoming calendar in MMA here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal.
There's still a lot of MMA to tell you about and react to. Since we're short on time, we'll have to make it quick, but we promise it'll be good. Here's the MMA lightning round on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Esports Animal. It is lightning round time, and it's powered by KMAA. They offer classes for children in self-defense, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, MMA, personal training, kickboxing, yoga, and martial arts. From the in-depth training at KMAA, many of the students have catapulted themselves into professional careers in the UFC, Bellator, and Invicta fighting promotions. They will help you achieve your goals. Call them at 865-771-9775 or visit their website at knoxmma.com. They're located at 4201 Martin Mill Pike in Knoxville with Tim Loy. I'm Vince Ferrara. Poirier and McGregor, these two getting after it, Tim, in a lightning round. What's this one come down to right now?
In a nutshell, we had a bit of a Twitter beef that has emerged over the last couple of days where Conor had promised Poirier's charity a $500,000 donation at their last fight. Afterward, Poirier states that they tried to reach out to collect that money, and then Conor ghosted him, and Conor says he couldn't find out exactly where the money was going to be spent, so he wasn't going to pay him. And long story short, now he's saying that the fight is off with Poirier, and he's not going to let him make more money on McGregor's name. That has not come from the UFC, so take it with a grain of salt.
Ratings for this past weekend in MMA. UFC on ABC2, according to Kevin Ioli, who's a national MMA reporter, that drew 859,000 average ratings during the 3 hours. He said the ratings increased 74% in the last hour from the first, which means low numbers to start, big numbers for the main event, well over 1 million. And then Bellator on Friday did 103,000 average. MMA, I think, still continues to perform well on television right now, right?
Yeah, of course. And if you think about it, this was an early start time in Vegas. I guess the local time, it would have been like 9 o'clock in the morning. So a lot of people are just getting up.
Next week, we're going to be breaking down UFC 261. It'll be fight week for a full capacity venue at the ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena, UFC 261, three title fights. Which one of those three are you most excited for, Tim Loy?
Man, I'm going to go with the, I'm going to go against the grain. I'm going to go with that female title fight with Wiley Zhang, because that's really, that's what I'm excited to see the most. I think that's one that's the closest.
I agree. Tim, awesome job. Really appreciate it. We will talk to you next week, my man.
Looking forward to it, Vince. Thanks.
That is Tim Loy and Vince Ferrar. Thank you so much for listening here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the sports animal.
Thanks for listening to In the Cage MMA Radio as Vince and Tim bring you inside the fight game of MMA with this unique weekly one-hour show, 8 to 9 on 99.1, the sports animal.